Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. This is episode number 161. And today is a very special show for me because I have the opportunity, the privilege, the honor to visit with my friend and colleague, Dr. Amy Pakula. And today we're going to be talking about physical therapy and more. So welcome to the show, Amy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Indeed, the pleasure. And there's a backstory regarding the genesis of this discussion. And it kind of started out where I think not too long ago we had exchanged, as we occasionally do, some text messages on a professional front. And one thing led to another. And then we're having this really outstanding phone conversation, which I should have found a way to record because it was so good. But just decided, hey, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of really what I consider to be the crossroads of healthcare and fitness and wellness. And I thought, gosh, your perspectives are, they're inspiring to me, and I think they're going to be very valuable to our audience. So that's kind of how we wound up here today. And just looking forward to, hearing some of the things that you've got to share with us.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I'm excited you're bringing this out to everyone, so more people can hear this perspective and share it with others and hopefully influence the community and ultimately people's health. So this would be great.
Absolutely. And so jumping right in, allow me to give you a chance to introduce yourself and maybe talk as briefly or as at length as you care to regarding your background and what you do currently.
Sure. So I'm a physical therapist, obviously. I went to Pacific University PT school. I graduated in 2008. I then practiced in outpatient orthopedics for a few years. And then I did a postdoctorate fellowship program in orthopedic manual physical therapy and graduated from that fellowship program in 2012. And then shortly after that, I started my own practice, Momentum Physical Therapy. And with that, I've had a special interest in treating different spine conditions and a focus on headaches and migraines more specifically. So those are my personal areas of interest and kind of bridging that gap in terms of the headache world and migraine world between neurology and physical therapy. That's an area right now that there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of overlap and communication between those two fields, and trying to say, how can we both help these patients with migraine and headache pathologies?
Boy, that's interesting. Maybe talking about that in greater detail in working with both headache and then specifically migraine patients. How's that going with, say, integrating your take on the physical therapy world with the rest of quote unquote medicine?
Yeah, so that's been an interesting development. So I initially became interested in migraines because my dad, who is now a retired physician, had migraines, I think, from the time when he was in his residency in medical school. Hmm. So I grew up seeing him, you know, have migraines and need to be in a dark room and deal with the nausea and the vomiting sometimes, and just being really uncomfortable and not being able to function very well for periods of time. And hearing him talk about, you know, at that time, what was that, 30 years ago, that migraine treatment, there weren't a lot of avenues for patients. And even people who are like himself, who are well versed in medicine, who could advocate for themselves well, there weren't a lot of treatments available other than pharmaceutical intervention. And even that pharmaceutical intervention was relatively limited at the time. There's been a lot of growth there. But I think that's what initially kind of sparked my interest in migraine treatment specifically, and saying, how else can we complement what's currently available as far as pharmaceutical intervention? What else can we do as physical therapists to be an adjunct to this, to help people continue to improve beyond pharmaceuticals? So that's really what's kind of sparked my interest in it. And that's led to me attending the American Headache Society annual conference, where I'm one of, you know, a handful of PTs there in attendance. Typically it's neurologists, primary care physicians, nurse practitioners, emergency room physicians. And trying to start that conversation of how can physical therapists be a complement to this, to the ultimate care of these patients. Because right now it seems to be the physicians and neurologists are really focusing on that pharmaceutical intervention. There is more focus and attention now on lifestyle and behavioral interventions, but that bridge between physical therapy, in terms of we are really well suited as physical therapists to help bridge this gap of starting to help and facilitate and plan and implement these different lifestyle behavioral changes. We are perfect providers to facilitate that. And that's just not a conversation that's really happening yet. So it's been an interesting journey. And I would say oftentimes the first response I get from people, whether that's in the public or in the medical field, is saying, oh, you're interested in migraine or helping patients with migraine. What does physical therapy do? And so then I go into that discussion of how we can work on those behavioral aspects of things, but then also saying, hey, if there's things going on with the cervical spine, with the jaw, with a sensitized nervous system in general, we are the perfect provider to help with that. That was a long explanation.
No, that was great. It kind of cued me up, and you said a couple things there. I'll try to bounce back. First of all, you said we are outstanding providers or options. You are, is what I would say more specifically, because my level of education in that area is quite limited. But I was very intrigued by, you know, your emphasis about lifestyle, and I want to get into that maybe a bit more deeply. But prior to that, if possible, in the clinic, what are some of the interventions or modalities or techniques that you find to be successful in working with these clients
with headaches and migraines specifically?
Yes.
Yeah. So my general approach when we talk to someone with a headache or a migraine is trying to determine what are some of the significant contributing factors and underlying causes. As we know that the neck, the jaw, the upper back can refer to the head and can contribute or sometimes be the primary cause of a headache or be an influencing factor with migraine. And my role is to help determine if there is any dysfunction in the neck or any issues in the neck, upper back, jaw that are contributing, that we can treat to help downregulate or limit the number of migraine attacks that someone is experiencing. So that's my kind of initial role. And then what we're doing is integrating those different lifestyle and behavioral factors as well. But the first step is saying, is there something going on in the neck, in the jaw, that is contributing to what this person is experiencing? And if there is, are there treatments that we can implement that would be helpful in improving that? And so that might be something that might be hands-on treatment of joint mobilization or manipulation. That might be specific strength. That might be endurance training. I also use dry needling in some circumstances. We're also at some points using eye motion retraining or joint position error training for the neck as well. So those are an example of kind of some of the main treatments that I implement.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds like that physical therapy mindset of optimizing, the individual, the organism, the system, and just removing barriers to good function, first of all. And then if you identify a deficiency, shoring that up a bit, makes a lot of sense to me. But now I'm super intrigued because I've got thoughts on what lifestyle interventions might look like, but I think I'm about to learn quite a bit. If you could feel free to illustrate that.
Sure, sure. So the way that I explain, or in a very broad sense, explain when someone gets a headache or a migraine attack, I explain it as a cup of water that's overflowing. Mm-hmm. So when the cup of water overflows is when someone experiences a headache or a migraine attack. And we think of what is water in the cup. So that might be a genetic predisposition to migraine. Maybe you have a family history. Perhaps there are environmental elements that you are reacting to, whether there's, you know, we had wildfires this summer, so maybe the smoke in the air is another contributing factor. Perhaps there's a increased stress in one's life. So with COVID-19, we're changing how we're working. We're changing our daily lifestyle. We're changing probably how our children are receiving their education. That all contributes to stress and is more cup in the water, or more water in the cup, excuse me. And then let's say you have a little bit of a neck injury. You know, maybe you fell skiing 2 years ago and your neck got a little tweaked or something, and that's been bothersome. That's more water in the cup. And then let's say your sleep patterns have been pretty altered for a variety of reasons, maybe due to stress, maybe because your neck hurts, maybe because who knows why. And then pretty soon this cup is overflowing pretty frequently. So our goal is to remove water from the cup and build those walls higher. So some of that water in the cup we can't remove, right? Like, we can't change what our genetics are. We can't necessarily change all of the things, our environment. If there's a wildfire, we can't change that. But what are the things that we can change? We can't often change how our sleep hygiene. We can often take a lot of control over our nutritional intake. We can often take a lot of control over how we're moving our body, when we're moving our body, and trying to implement some stress management practices. So that's often how I explain this to a patient.
Mm-hmm. Well, with your permission, I might borrow that water in the cup analogy, because I think it applies to a lot of things. And as you were describing that, I was thinking, okay, well, there's a table full of cups, and you know, one shape of cup is the migraine cup. And so for those individuals, right, that, you know, overflow equals potential for the migraine versus mm-hmm. for someone else, it's some other issue or malady perhaps.
Exactly. Exactly.
So thanks for that. I'm going to take that.
Yeah. And I think that was originally, I think Greg Lehman is who I heard this from originally, who's a chiropractor. And I've adapted it to migraine.
So sure.
That's who, just to acknowledge who I originally heard this from.
Okay. So I think you're going to know these answers again, because I don't, but I'll come across an article somewhere or study that says there may be some relationship with migraines to glucose metabolism or insulin sensitivity within the brain. And what's the deal with that, to best of your knowledge?
We might have to edit this one out, because I don't know that there's a clear, a clear pattern. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that there seems to be so much contradicting information. One of the interesting things about migraine research is that it affects close to 39 million people in the US, but it's the it's classified as a neurological disease, and it receives the least amount of funding as far as research goes. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of that is because it may be a life-altering neurological condition, but it's not a life-limiting or it's not a life-ending neurological condition. So oftentimes I think research dollars go towards more often life-ending neurological mm-hmm. conditions. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm aware, I don't know that there's a clear mm-hmm. relationship. We know that, yeah, we're just gonna have to edit this part out, John.
Well,
so tell me more about
you
what
say
you're
that aware of. Yeah, you say that, but I don't necessarily see this as an edit out option, because I think you clarified the lack of clarity if you will, because that's kind of how I phrased the question. It's like, well, you know, I've heard this as supposition, but not definitive. And I think you definitely said, yeah, we, you know, the educated practitioner or consumer of literature would say, well, there hasn't been yet a consensus. And, you know, I feel like you've got your finger on the pulse of that there. Yeah. So thanks for updating.
Tell me more about your question.
Oh, no, just basically, there have been a few studies that have said, well, there may be a link between diet and headache patterns, migraines among them, and also that it is possible that it could relate more to carbohydrates and blood glucose levels and consequently insulin levels in the body. Reason I asked the question was because I wasn't aware that there was a definitive answer, and you basically said, not yet.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, I think nutrition is one of those things that's even more challenging to study, to isolate variables. You know, there are some studies that I'm aware of that link improved nutrition. So giving yourself higher quality nutrient intake, less processed foods, less processed carbohydrates that improve, that limit or decrease the number of migraine days that someone experiences. Again, it's a little challenging to say, is that specifically due to this nutrition change that this person started implementing in their life, or were there other things that happened at that time as well? Because it's so difficult to study humans over an extended period of time when they're not in the lab with you. But that definitely, so far it suggests that, right? And those are also, those are definitely lifestyle factors, behavioral changes that we are encouraging people to make, because we know if we fuel your body better, your body is going to be so much better off in all of these different facets, much like sleep. We know that sleep and migraine are really closely related. Is that because it's directly linked, or is it because the improved sleep is altering these other processes in the bodies, which ultimately have an effect on migraine? And I think nutrition is similar from what, you know, my current understanding of that.
Yeah. Well, before we leave that topic, I think that was really a kind of like a great example of nutrition being one of the more challenging areas of research, because like you indicated, there are very few randomized controlled trials on humans in wards these days for many reasons. And so much of the data we have is observational, and, you know, there's correlation, but not necessarily can we prove causation. And and I think that trickles into, you know, our work in health, fitness, performance, you know, as well. It's a lot of the literature requires good study and interpretation, and we have to be careful not to cherry pick abstracts and some other things out there that I'm, you know, I end up talking about on, not on your topic or this topic, but on others. And so it's refreshing to hear you not be, you know, a person who is filled with bias. And I actually interact with a number of those individuals on a regular basis, unfortunately. So here I am being long-winded, and I don't want to hog up the chance to have you talk about some things. In addition to migraines and other headache-related disorders, if that's appropriate term to use, what are some common orthopedic issues? You kind of, you know, are already talked about, well, you know, we're looking at the neck and the temporomandibular joint and some other things. What are some common things or one that you see, and possibly what would you say is a great intervention, lifestyle habit, exercise tip that you could offer, you know, for the average person who might be, you know, a recreational athlete or a fitness enthusiast?
Well, that's a great question. And there are probably so many to choose from. So I see a lot of spine pathologies, so different spine related conditions. So whether that's back pain, neck pain, thoracic pain. And while there's, you know, a myriad of different underlying causes and contributing factors, I mean, ultimately the holistic long-term management of these conditions, when you really take a 30,000 foot view, still hinges on getting strong, being mobile, and if someone's experiencing their nervous system is sensitized, trying to work on normalizing or decreasing the responsiveness of that central nervous system. And so those include things like sleeping well, eating well, having some sort of stress management practice, getting social interaction and moving. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting that we can become really focused and honed in on one specific joint and how we want to move one joint in one direction. But when you really bring it back, we still have that joint that may not be moving as well as it could is still in a human that needs to have these core principles. And those ultimately don't change a whole lot, whether it's an underlying back issue or neck issue or somebody recovering from a knee surgery. Mm-hmm. It's kind of really how I look at that, you know?
Yeah, couldn't agree more, 100%. And, you know, when you're talking about, say, moving well and moving often in a healthy human, and it really addresses so many things because that's just how we're ancestrally designed to function or operate. But, you know, the topic of posture often comes up because we have, you know, we have necks and we have workstations, and, you know, sometimes the body starts to look too much like the workstation. Some people say it that way. and I have a thought, position that I have is that, you know, no posture is inherently problematic unless it's sustained for, you know, a long enough time to cause hypoxia or, you know, strain on tissues and this kind of thing. And so, yeah, I do think that we want to hover around a reasonable ideal, but as long as we are moving, you know, movement beats statics every time. Has that been your experience with clients as well?
Yeah, I would say that's a very similar outlook that I have, and what has been demonstrated anecdotally in patient care, and what we're seeing more and more consistently through the literature as well, is that there isn't one posture necessarily that's problematic, or that we can't necessarily relate pain to being in one posture, but that really it's how can we move, and that there is move more frequently, move in a healthy way, I suppose. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, removing some of that fear of being in a bad posture. I think that's been an interesting, educational point. I think for that's changed over time, right? I think as physical therapists for a long period of time, and research perhaps demonstrated this for a period of time, that posture did lead to pain. And so we were sharing that narrative with the patient. And it's interesting now to work with patients who have received that information and have really internalized that, and now are quite concerned and fearful about being in a quote unquote bad posture, because that may be the thing that's causing their pain or their problem, and trying to implement some additional information and share additional information with them why that might not be consistent, and why perhaps we can start turning down that level of fear of that posture, and that's not necessarily the thing that's causing their problem, or is currently causing their pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so throw a curveball at you. Hey, thanks for being here today. I appreciate that immensely, as you know. So I have known you now, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, something like mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. And always known you to be energetic, fit, healthy, you know, just your presence it's very palpable in that manner. So what do you do? I mean, what do you do for your training or exercise program, and some of maybe anything else like a nutritional focus?
Sure. So I think for me, that's changed over time as far as my fitness. I've tried to always focus on just moving. More recently, in the last year, I've decided to embark on biathlon, which is a combination of skate, skiing, and shooting. I was invited or found out about a women's biathlon clinic here at Crosscut, and said, well, this is really great. This is really fun. We should get into this. And then learned that in addition to shooting, you also need to learn how to ski. And while I've been downhill skied for a number of years, I had not really done much in the way of skate skiing. So my focus over the last year has shifted a lot to try to learn this new, you know, these new psychomotor patterns and these new challenges as far as the cardiovascular system goes. So my training has really changed in the last year or so to just take on a new challenge and a new goal, which has been really fun. It's been interesting to do that at age 38 now, to really change from more of a kind of a strength focused training to more of a slightly more endurance focused training. So it's been great. It's probably keeping all, you know, getting all different types of synapses in my brain working and firing now. But I would say as far as the amount or the number of days, I probably do some sort of training probably 5 days a week. And it's a combination of running, strength training, a little bit of agility here and there, and some mobility work as well.
Love the balance. Love that novel learning, taking on new challenges concept too. I think that really is something we all should do from time to time. You know, it's good to maybe be humbled, but then also have success and, you know, take those challenges up to mastery level, which I bet that's what you're doing. Okay, in the training realm, what have you found is your favorite type of training? So like, say, do you like doing intervals out running or skiing or biking? Do you prefer plyometrics in the gym, so forth, so on? What might be your jam?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I don't know that I have a favorite. I think what I enjoy about this is that I have been working with different coaches, or, you know, following different training programs where I'm not building the program, I'm just following it. So I think that's been what I enjoy the most, is that I just follow what's recommended, and it's always changing. It's always something new and challenging. And it's just kind of meeting that challenge of the day. I don't know that I necessarily have a favorite. I like the variety. I think some people really love exercise while they're doing it. I think I really love exercise once it's over, and that a feeling of accomplishment in the moment. I don't necessarily have that feeling of, oh, I'm so glad I'm doing this. And that's, yeah, not something that I necessarily have, but I really love the sense of accomplishment and feeling of, oh my gosh, I did that. And that was, you know, I didn't really feel great today, but I went out and did it and I got it done.
Well, I took something from that, and that is that even coaches benefit from being coached. And I think that's just a great message out there for, you know, for everyone to be coachable. And, you know, I get coached in several areas by several people, and I found it to be immensely enjoyable, and it tends to save you time and frustration. You get better results and or perspectives. Cool stuff. That answers your energy that you're presenting. Without getting too techie, I mean, you can do as much as you want. I sometimes feel sorry for the audience when I geek out, but you know, in your opinion, what would you say, just talking about the physical therapy profession, what do you think is the greatest strength of the physical therapist? What are we trained or equipped to do best?
Well, that is a really good question. What are we trained or equipped to do best?
And I wasn't trying to put, you know, stump you or anything. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, what's your opinion? I haven't even thought about what mine would be if you asked that back to me.
And I'm kind of thinking, would it be that I'm almost thinking that we're probably best equipped to be change agents for people. And whether that's a client comes into you with, let's take a back injury. And yes, you're working on the mobility of the low back, of the hips, but then you're also determining what is the barrier for that person to get back to what they love doing. You know, is that and there's all these different barriers that are included, right? We have the physical barrier, we have, might be mobility or strength or balance, whatever that might be. But then also different mental obstacles or fears that we're trying to discover to help somebody, then, how can we help them overcome that? And then also those barriers of saying, how do we help this person be as healthy as possible so that this injury is less likely to happen again? And those might be habit changes that we're trying to implement or help them implement to decrease the likelihood of something like this happening again, right? So I keep thinking about, maybe we're best equipped to be change agents in all these different facets. And what we have to do is investigate and find out what are the different obstacles or barriers, and then how do we help facilitate change? And whether that's, with our hands or with our programming or training, as far as the strength goes, strength and endurance aspect goes, is that more of diving into some women's, fears, concerns about their body, or then saying, what are those lifestyle changes that might be most beneficial, and how do we start kind of peeling away the layers of the onion to say, how can we help this person start implementing some lifestyle and behavioral changes and habits?
Wow. Yeah. I love that. I was trying to like rehearse what my answer would be while you were talking. And I think this whole idea of change agent is powerful, because to me that says coaching almost, being a coach in whatever way we want to quantify that. Mm-hmm. I was off in the rabbit hole of saying, I think I want to be a root cause identifier. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like the same, it's a two-sided coin there. The change agent first has to figure out, what's the real thing that we have to affect the change in?
Right.
And I think that's both of those things are kind of unique, because this is a show of advocacy for the physical therapist as well as other things. And, if a person is out there saying, I've had some chronic problems, and I just can't quite unlock it, can't solve it, then I'm going to say, have you considered working with a PT who might be able to, help you figure out, which issue, because we all have many issues, not just mechanical ones, but which one is the primary driver that we can address? And then back to the change agent idea, how can we best do that? So, this is why I had you come on, because we didn't have much of a discussion about what we were going to talk about, which is really, those make for the best conversations anyway. Things aren't scripted. So I don't know, I think we could say a lot of things. I just want to say one more thing that's physical therapy related. And it's this, what have you done to kind of adapt to this year 2020, and of course the pandemic and all of its related issues, just flow along in your professional work and use different models, so forth and so on?
Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest one, or the most obvious one, has been implementing more telehealth. So being able to do real-time video with patients while they're in their homes or in their offices. I think what's been really great about that, I think initially as physical therapists, since this was new, or to many of us. I mean, telehealth has existed for a long period of time, but with COVID, we were forced to say, hey, we need to utilize this now. And so it was this great kind of forced change or forced progression for the field. And I think what a lot of colleagues have discovered, and myself included, is that it's really reduced a lot of barriers for people. So a patient now doesn't necessarily have to work in travel time to your office or figure out childcare or navigate, okay, I'm going to go to this, go to PT and then pick up, this and then run this errand. You can just do it. And so it's been easier for many people to actually receive the care that would be most helpful for them because you've reduced some of these barriers. And so I think that's been the most obvious one, has been implementing telehealth. What I've also found to be something I've implemented for people as patients may not be going to the same gyms that they were going to is implementing more home strength programs that might be gym-like, but that they can do with the equipment that they have available at their house. Mm-hmm. And I think I've done also just more checking in with patients just about life, and not saying necessarily, how is your neck or your elbow or whatever it might be, but how are things going? What's happening? And just having more social interaction with clients as well, because I think it's something that we all need. And this is a kind of an unprecedented and odd time, and everyone's experiencing different challenges. I like that quote, I think, saying that we're all in the same storm, but we each are in different vessels. Some people might be navigating this in a dinghy. Some people might be in a very large boat that's not rocking as much, and reaching out to people more often and just checking in and saying how are you doing and how can we help and just visiting. So
the use of tech meets the humanistic side. I love it. Because exactly. I think we need to, perfunctory and skilled as anyone might be at what they do, we're working with humans and we do care. And I think that, the fact that you're expressing, I think you've always done that, but there's a real need for that now to have people know that. And then also, mm-hmm. Never would I have said, or never will I say that, telehealth and related models will, replace everything that needs to be done in, hands-on brick and mortar applications. That's not the case, but it, like you said, it removes obstacles, solves problems for many people. And that has been my experience as well. In fact, I guess I'm not even sure how to phrase this question, but it would be kind of like, have you heard or come across or had conversations where people would say, well, I don't see how you can do what you do across a screen? And then my experience has been, well, again, not everything, but a lot of times when you're trying to analyze movement, figure out that root cause, solve a problem, and then coach a person, or if I use your words, be a change agent by saying, well, look, you could do 20 different exercises, but if you simply do this one or two and this lifestyle thing, we probably are going to fill that bucket quite a bit. So long-winded, I'll come back to what I was trying to ask was, have you found that because of your skill set, it's been fairly easy to convince patients and clients how they can get results working with you across the screen?
Sure. I think that's great. So I think I was trained as a manual therapist, right? So that's all kind of hands-on intensive. So first with telehealth, I had to overcome my own bias too, for saying, because mm-hmm. my bias is to say a remote or a visit where I'm not having my, able to use my hands-on skills is not going to be as good or the same. And so that was the first barrier, is to challenge my own biases and say, okay, how can we overcome this perceived barrier? And it's really if you open your mind, it's really not that challenging. I think obviously there are limitations with telehealth. You can't do a full neurological exam, right? But with telehealth, what's great is that we can do a pretty full evaluation for the most part. And that can help us determine, okay, is this something that we need to do an in-person visit for? Or is this, things look good? We can continue, and it's appropriate to continue in a virtual manner, or does this need to be some sort of hybrid? So I would say yes. I think the first barrier for me wasn't getting patients on board. It was examining my own bias first for telehealth.
I don't think I'm going to dive into this much right now, but you just made me think of some things like, hey, we should have a conversation at some point where we talk about manual therapy in absentia and its efficacy. And so how can you teach a person to do certain things on their own? And then the flip side of that is, let's say if we have a person whose lifestyle is suboptimal, and as is their health, no matter how much actual direct hands-on manual therapy they receive, results tend to be fleeting at best, because we ultimately need to improve, back to what you said earlier, movement. And you know, if a person can move in a non-destructive manner, or stop doing whatever it was. So that was just a thought. And, you know, if I haven't annoyed or offended you too much, maybe I'll get you to come back and we can talk about that.
That would be great. That'd be a very rich discussion, I think. Yeah.
And I don't think I told any bad jokes yet either. So I'm out of character. I feel like you've given me a lot of great pieces of input and perspectives on healthcare, on physical therapy, on your specific work and approaches. And I think that that's really what I was hoping to drag out for our listeners. So maybe in wrapping up, kind of like, what are you up to now currently, or coming up as far as new projects in the future at Momentum?
Oh, sure. So what I've done since, I mean, obviously schedules and plans for 2020 change, but it did give me more time to work on some additional projects that were not specifically patient care. And so one of those things that I recently finished was a headache and migraine guide, so which is 38 pages, I believe, an ebook, which is available on my website, which is intended for the general public, people who are dealing with headache and migraines, to really give them a good foundation of information to empower themselves to say, okay, now I have this base level information that's really going to be helpful for me moving forward and developing a plan. So I was able to complete that. I'm also beginning in January of 2021, a 6-week online course about headaches and migraines, which is intended for the public as well, which will be live sessions. And then we have additional resources and guidebooks that go along with that. So those are two programs that I'm really, or two offerings, I guess, that I'm really excited about, to be able to help more people than just those that are in my immediate geographic region.
Oh, that's awesome. And how's the course going to work? I think you kind of said that each week there's going to be like a meeting, and then there's some support information. But just for the listeners' benefit, are there any details or nuts and bolts that you'd like to share?
Sure. So there's more information about it on my website. But a basic outline is that we're going to have weekly 1-hour lecture and then conversation time for questions. There's a guidebook that goes along with each module, with each week, and some additional resources that'll be giving someone. It's really the compilation of all of the resources that I have been I guess accumulating or curating over the last decade. So I'm really excited about that. There's also going to be a private Facebook group for people to ask questions or even find support and share individual resources there. And then we'll also have office hours with me. That is just virtual office hours, another time to discuss and ask questions.
Oh, that's a great model. And I think I wasn't aware of anything like that existing. So I think you're going to help a lot of people, and that's fantastic.
I'm excited.
How about you personally? What, you got anything going on, I guess, with the circumstances of that we're always talking about with this year? Are there races that you're going to participate in?
Well, I'm still quite new and novice when it comes to biathlon. So I think they're going to have a few local time trials and unofficial little events that I'll participate in, which it's just always great to have an external goal to continue to kind of shape your training and your programming for. So continue to do that. And just really trying to take advantage of the outdoor resources we have here in Southwest Montana and continue to be outside and ski and be in nature, given that things are probably still going to be a little uncertain and changing over the next handful of months. So,
And we live in a gold mine of opportunity for outdoor recreation. And I know we don't take that for granted.
Yes.
But I also think that there's a little pearl there. You found something to make winter more tolerable, perhaps, or even, enjoyable, because we're right at the verge of the time of icy darkness. And that's a tough time.
Yeah. And I think it's been so key for me to have this group that I'm training with twice a week, because we get that social interaction outside in a manner that's, following all the guidelines that we have for COVID, getting exercise, getting sunshine, getting fresh air, you're with people, and sharing some laughs and getting some good endorphins going. So it's been key for me.
Well, you're checking the boxes, and I really appreciate you checking a few for me and for our audience today. And maybe in just closing, I would ask if you'd like to be found, if you'd like to have folks be able to contact you regarding the things that you discussed and some of the products and services that you have, where can people do so?
Sure, that would be great. So my clinic website is MomentumPTMT. And there you will have my contact information. There is information about the ebook. There's also information about the online course. People can also contact me through email at amy@momentumptmt.com. And as far as social media goes, I'm most active on Instagram, which is MomentumPTMT. And I'm also on Facebook as well, and would love to invite questions or comments and conversation.
Outstanding, Amy. So thank you very much. It was indeed a great pleasure. And hey, listeners and audience guys, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate you.